Study tonight is out of Amos chapter 2, verses 6 to 16, the great need for God's people to appreciate His grace. Israel needed to heed God's written Mosaic law, as we learned in our last lesson out of Amos chapter 2, verses 4 and 5, but she was also responsible to value the lessons of His gracious provisions, like Amos chapter 2, 6 to 16 teaches. Well, we study Amos 2, 6 to 16 to discern those practical provisions that we might heed their lessons for us today. I'd like to read the passage before we get into it. Amos chapter 2, beginning at verse 6 and going to verse 16. Thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions of Israel and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they sold the righteous for silver and the poor for a pair of shoes, that pant after the dust of the earth and the head of the poor, and turn aside the way of the meek. And a man and his father will go in unto the same maid to profane my holy name. And they lay themselves down upon cloths or garments that are laid to pledge by every altar, and they drink the wine of the condemned in the house of their God. Yet I destroyed the Amorite before them, whose height was like the height of the cedars, and he was strong as the oaks. Yet I destroyed his fruit from above and his roots from below. I also brought you up from the land of Egypt, and led you for 40 years through the wilderness to possess the land of the Amorite. And I raised up your sons for prophets, and of your young men for Nazarites. Is it not even so, you children of Israel, saith the Lord? But you gave the Nazarites wine to drink, and you commanded the prophets, saying, prophesy not. Behold, I'm pressed under you, or you can say, I'm going to press you under as a cart is pressed that is full of sheaves. Therefore the flight shall perish from the swift, the strong shall not strengthen his force, neither shall the mighty deliver himself. Neither shall he stand that handeth the bow. He that is swift of foot shall not deliver himself. Neither shall he that rides the horse deliver himself. And he that is courageous among the mighty shall flee away naked in that day, saith the Lord. Okay, what's going on here? In this passage we have a very interesting prophecy. After producing God's judgment, and pronouncing rather God's judgment on the nations around Israel, including his judgment on the southern kingdom of Judah, God pronounced judgment on Israel. Remember, Israel is the northern kingdom. Judah is the southern kingdom. They split after Rehoboam, after the grandson of David. And they went their separate ways. Well, similar to Judah's sin of violating the Mosaic covenant that we covered last week, Israel of the northern kingdom had likewise violated several major requirements of the Mosaic law. For example, Israel treated the poor unfairly. Verse 6, honest Jews who could be trusted to pay their debts were sold into slavery for the silver that they owed, while those who were not able to pay their debts were sold for a pair of sandals. And that's a reference to the practice of sealing a land deed with the transfer of a sandal. So those who were able to repay were enslaved for what they could pay, while the poor lost their land altogether in violation of God's Deuteronomy 15:7-11 stipulation that the poor were to be traded fairly and generously. In that passage in Deuteronomy, incidentally, the Lord went out of his way to say, now remember the poor in the land. You're going to have the poor with you always. So make sure you treat him with respect. You treat him fairly. You give him a break. You don't just, make life difficult for him. He's troubled. He's oppressed because he's poor anyway. But you treat him well. You treat him with kindness. And they were doing anything but. And this shows that when there are people who are vulnerable around us, economically vulnerable, they might be physically vulnerable or challenged mentally or something, we have to do our part. If we have the advantage of health, we're doing all right financially, we have the advantage of being in our right mind, we have a responsibility to look out for people who are vulnerable and help them, not hurt them, not take advantage of them. So anyway, Israel's then court proceedings were perverted to exploit the poor, opposite Deuteronomy 16:19 and verse 7, the first part, that pant after the dust, the earth at the head of the poor, and turn aside the way of the meek. In other words, they're distorting the way of the meek. God had commanded the Jews in Deuteronomy 16:19, you shall not wrest judgment, you shall not twist the judgment, especially of the people who were poor. But in Jesus' day, it was very common for them, as soon as a man died and left his widow, the Jewish leaders would come in and they would make up charges against the widow or something, or they would twist her arm and so forth and end up taking all of her property or all of her money unless she had relatives that were around to protect. And this, of course, was something that angered the Lord. They were doing this back in Amos's day as well. So this is something that was repugnant against the Lord. And then in verse 7, the last part of verse 7, it says, a man and his father will go in under the same maid. This was a picture of fathers and sons who were intimate with the same girl. Now, this either occurred in their idol worship, which would have been absolutely horrible, or in relating to slave girls in violation of Exodus 21:7-9 that expanded on the Exodus 20:14 adultery prohibition. In Exodus 20:14, God had said, thou shalt not commit adultery. And one of the clarifications in Exodus 21, verses 7-9, is that if a father took a slave girl, he could give the slave girl, if he didn't want the slave girl as his wife, in other words, often they would take the slave girl and make her a second or a third wife, then he was supposed to give the girl to the son, and that would be the son's wife. And if then, and this was a Jewish girl, if, you know, the son didn't want her the wife, then either the girl got her freedom back without any money, or her relatives could purchase her back. This was to protect a Jewish slave girl. We've already covered this. But what was happening, they were violating both the father and the son were intimate with the same girl. And this is absolutely repugnant to the Lord. And, of course, this would break up the family relationship, the family structure, and that was absolutely repugnant to God. Well, people in Israel openly violated the law's prohibition on items not to be taken as collateral in loan arrangements. Items like the seizure of a poor man's cloak that kept him warm at night, according to Exodus 22, 26, and 27, or a widow's garment. In fact, if a widow was involved in a land deal or she was purchasing something, she would give something for collateral. They said, whatever you do, if she gives something in collateral, you give it right back to her. Especially if it's her cloak, because normally the only thing the widow had to wear was that one cloak. And if she didn't wear it that night, she would freeze. She would, you know, wouldn't be able to sleep. So the Bible said if a person is that pressed, you don't take anything that they have as collateral. You trust, you make a deal, and you trust, it's like a handshake. You trust them. But the problem is, the men in Israel were both taking the garments from these widows and the poor people, and then they had the gall to lie down and sleep with them, or even spread them out in their sacrificial feasts by their pagan altars. They were worshiping at these pagan altars, and they were taking these cloaks that they had taken from these poor and the widows and stretching them out sort of like a picnic cloak. And this was something that was, God says, you're just basically rubbing this in my face. And that's what was going on. Verse 8, and they lay themselves down upon the clothes that are taken to pledge by every altar. And every altar, there were only supposed to be one altar that was God's altar, but they were worshiping all sorts of altars. And then they drank the wine of the condemned in the house of their God. The people of Israel were rebelling against the most basic stipulation covenant of all. They were worshiping other gods. You'll remember Exodus 20, verse 3, 4, 5, and 6 says, thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make any other image gods. Image of anything in the earth or in the heavens above and so forth. But they were doing this. So these were sins that the people of Israel were performing. But going just beyond violating the Mosaic laws the northern kingdom of Judah was reported to have done, God's prophet revealed that Israel had actually ignored God's great grace. And this is what was really the capstone of their sins. They had departed from the Lord, and yet God had been very, very gracious. In verse 9, God reminded Israel through Amos that he had long ago destroyed her seemingly insurmountable foes, the giant Amorites, so that she could enter and possess the promised land. Remember verse 9? Yet I destroyed the Amorite before them, whose height was like the height of the cedars, and he was strong as the oaks. Remember when they had sent the 10 spies into the land, and the Anakim were there, that was one of the groups of the Amorites and so forth. They were terrified because these men were huge. In fact, some of these people think Goliath was 9 feet 6 inches tall. If he stood under a basketball net, his face would have been up in the net. That's how big this man was. And yet God destroyed whole companies of these people to give them the land. And they'd forgotten all about this. Then the Lord added that he'd also been graciously helping Israel. He had saved her from the Egyptian bondage where she had helplessly languished for hundreds of years, implying that she would otherwise have stayed in bondage. Notice the first part of verse 10, I also brought you up from the land of Egypt. And when you think of the land of Egypt, think of all the the miracles that the Lord performed, all the signs in Egypt, all the 10 plagues, then the crossing of the Red Sea, and then the closing of the Red Sea over Pharaoh's armies. You know, they'd forgotten all about that. And then God reminded Israel how he had graciously led her in the wilderness for 40 years. Notice the last part of verse 10, or second part of verse 10, and I led you for 40 years through the wilderness. If you check Deuteronomy 29, 5-8, God says your sandals didn't wear out, your clothes didn't wear out. And this is amazing when you have teenagers and they're out in the desert. They'll wear through clothes just like that. I had a son when he was wearing sneakers. I don't think at one point he was lasting more than 3 months in a pair of sneakers. He had to get a new pair because he's wearing them out. Or he was growing out of them. But God says your sandals didn't wear out, your clothes didn't wear out. And then God gave them food. He gave them manna every day. And then he destroyed, in that passage, Deuteronomy 29, 7 and 8, he destroyed Heshbon, the king of Sihon, and the king of Heshbon, and so forth. These Og and Sihon, these two kings of these various very powerful nations that were around, protected them as they were out in the middle of the wilderness, so that they could come in and they could possess the land of the Amorite. And then in verse 11, God says he had raised up prophets and sanctified Nazarites, ministers of God's truth and examples of his holiness, respectively, for Israel to have as leaders and examples in righteous living. I raised up your sons for prophets and of your young men Nazarites. A Nazarite was a man who didn't have his hair cut. He didn't drink any wine or strong wine and so forth. There were several stipulations that he practiced. And he was seen as a man who was supposed to be holy to God. One of those was Samson. He didn't keep his vow entirely. But there were apparently other Nazarites. And these were examples so that they would have for leadership. But notice what they did. They spurned the grace of God, especially in how they treated these men of God. Verse 12, but you gave the Nazarites wine to drink. You know, the Nazarite was known for, one of the things he was known for was that he was not a person who drank any strong drink. So they gave the man wine to drink so that he would break his Nazarite vow. It's like they were looking for an opportunity to make the man unholy. And then they turned to the prophets. Notice the last part of verse 12. You commanded the prophets, don't prophesy. It's like people coming to the pastor and say, Pastor, don't preach. Don't teach. We don't want to hear it. That's not the message that we want. And that's basically what they were doing. At that point, God said, enough. Now you've gone over the top. And that's why God came on and he said, verse 13, behold, I'm pressed under you as a cart. A better translation might be, as the New International Version says, I'm going to press you down as a cart is pressed that is full of sheaves. It's like you take a cart and you overload it with sheaves and then the cart just collapses. The wheels, the axles, and everything just crushes. So that's what God says. Therefore, verse 14, notice the judgment. The flight shall perish from the swift. The strong shall not strengthen his force. Neither shall the mighty man deliver himself. Neither shall he stand that handles the bow, etc. He that is swift of foot shall not deliver himself. Neither shall he that rides a horse deliver himself. He that is courageous among the mighty shall flee away naked in that day, saith the Lord. So, the Lord, these people had reacted to the Lord's grace by spurning it. They had not only spurned God's grace and his provisions of defeating the Amorites and having delivered Israel from Egypt, caring for her every need for 40 years in the wilderness. She'd gone so far as to give the Nazarites, God had sent her wine to drink to corrupt their Nazarite vows and told his prophets not to prophesy his message. So, for these violations of the law and rejection of his grace, God was getting ready to crush Israel as a cart collapses under a huge load of sheaves. Nobody in Israel would be able to save himself from the invading army. And even Israel's bravest warriors would drop their weapons and cloaks, probably in retribution for unjustly seizing others' cloaks back in verse 8, in a vain attempt to flee for their lives. This is very typical of God's judgment. They had wrongly taken the cloaks of widows. They had wrongly taken the cloaks of poor people as collateral. So God says in that day, you're going to take your cloaks and you're going to fling away in fear and run without your cloaks. And so the judgment is going to be put right back upon them. There's a huge lesson here. Israel was judged not only for violating the word of God, but by resisting his evident expressions of gracious material provisions and his gifts of godly leaders and prophets to guide her in upright living. I mentioned this earlier today in the worship service, in the Sunday school message out of 2 Corinthians this morning, chapter 6, in the message this morning out of Exodus in regards to the table of showbread, and here in Amos chapter 2, and I couldn't have planned this. All of the lessons had to do with relationship to leaders and God's messengers and how God holds his people responsible to respond. So in application, may we heed the Bible for blessing. And then may we especially heed God's expressions of grace in a supply of material possessions and godly leaders to guide and instruct us in upright living. It's interesting, I was talking with a Christian today who had recently come back to our church, and they're going to be coming back. And she was saying, you know, about a year and a half ago, the Lord was speaking to me, I got to come back to Nepogue Church. And the Lord worked through a series of events to bring that home. And I said, that's interesting, because I was sharing this morning in the sermon how the Lord had used a car accident in my life to get me to stay faithful to his word. So the Lord is a lot more involved in our lives than what we think he is. Those of us who are in leadership have a tremendous responsibility. Those of us who are in subordinate positions also have a tremendous responsibility. But ultimately, God doesn't want us to forget his grace. When we look over the past and we see the way God has provided our food, our clothing, our income, when we see the way the Lord has forgiven us, that's something we're not supposed to forget, because that's worth something. And God help us never to spurn that, to ignore it, to treat it as light, because if we do, that's something that really bothers the Lord a lot. He wants his people to be grateful, and he wants them to be thankful to him. So God always help us to be thankful people and to respond to his grace. These other nations didn't have these expressions of God's grace. Tyre and Edom, Philistia, Ammon, all these other nations. But Israel had, and she spurned it. And so God was going to judge her in a very particular way. So may we always remember the grace of God and love him.